Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
He'll wrap it to the near point. Krug tees it up, fires. He scores! Torrey Krug with a blast at the high slot. He whistles it by Chris Drieger. And the Boston Bruins sweep the Sunshine State with a 2-1 overtime victory over the Panthers.
Welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Here on a Saturday morning, take you up until 11 o'clock today. From our Town Fair Tire Studios, Ryan by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, who had the call of that one, as you heard on Thursday night. A overtime game winner for Torrey Krug. Bruins not only sweep their two-game trip down to Florida, but a three-game road trip overall with the win over the Islanders last week. And then, of course, sandwiched in the middle is the win over the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are in town to take on the Bruins tonight. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Looking well-rested, like a nice trip down to warm Florida. And
may I suggest an ophthalmology or an optometrist appointment? But thanks.
A really nice week for this team. You know, getting 6 points. It doesn't matter where you go or who you're playing. You go on a three-game road trip, you come home with 6 points. Obviously, you've had a pretty good week. But when you talk about, you know, some of the competition that they saw on that trip, particularly Tampa Bay, but you know, Islanders are a potential playoff team. Florida's a potential playoff team, or has been for a good chunk of the season. It even more so is a solid trip. And now you come home tonight and get a matchup against the team that you're trying to put away in the division. So it's hopefully they can finish out what's been a really good week for this team.
Well, one of the things that I think Bob brought up, which was a great point, was it's not just the fact that you won those three games along that stretch against the Islanders, Tampa, and Florida, but you were really stingy doing it across those games. You shut out the Islanders. You only allowed one goal in Tampa, only allowed one goal in Florida. That's pretty impressive to be able to do it, especially against the latter two teams that can really bring it offensively. And that's a good sign for the team. I think the Bruins felt maybe on Thursday night that they didn't necessarily have their A game. They played hard, don't get me wrong, but at the same time they were able to still maintain a lot of the fundamentals that have allowed this team to win a ton of games and be atop of the NHL standings.
Yeah, and they got, I mean, Halak played well, right? Overtime, making a save on Barkov on a breakaway, not just that one, but other ones. He was solid in there. They had good team defense. I think Florida missed a couple of opportunities early in the game. Ekblad had a real good opportunity on a two-on-one that, you know, he tipped just wide, jumping up into the play. There was another one that Barkov had a chance on the left wing side, just to the right of Halak. This is all in the first period. So they misfired on a couple. Dadonov had a stick blow up on him in overtime. You know, who knows if that goes in or not. But so you need a little puck luck too, right? But they, you know, I really like the way they played against Tampa, especially for the first 35 to 40 minutes in that game. That was real good hockey. They took it to Tampa, that, you know, and then they, you know, I guess human nature a little bit in the third period, Tampa had their push and the Bruins hung in there and got the win. But that game, 21 shots on goal. I thought that was pretty impressive. Now that tells you that Tampa had the puck a lot, right? I mean, yeah, you know, had some chances in the third period, especially, but guys were committed to win in that game, and it showed.
Sorry to jump in there, but it's not just the block shot totals, but it's how many guys on a night in, night out basis are blocking shots. Because you know, a lot of the time in those games, you're seeing double digits up and down the roster of guys getting in lanes. Nick Ritchie blocked a couple of key shots in that game against Tampa Bay. Those are good things to see. So it's not just the defensemen that are blocking those shots. It's the forwards that are also sacrificing as well.
Being in the building, you know, the guys say whenever there's a big game like this, you know, you get the standard, look, we got to focus every night and yada, yada, yada. How big did that game feel the other night as opposed to, you know, a standard regular season game? Because
you know, look, these are two of the best teams in the league. They haven't seen each other, you know, and you know, an opportunity to play twice here in this week. Did it have a more of a playoff type intensity?
You know what? It did, because there was a ton of Bruins fans down there too.
Yeah, that always
actually
helps.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, Tampa's got a good following right now, and as you know, they've earned it. You know, Florida, the Panthers, they were probably, I don't know if it was half and half, but there were a lot of Bruins fans in Florida for that game. Even in Long Island, there were a ton of Bruins fans. So Bruins travel well. The Bruins fans travel well. The atmosphere in Tampa was real good. It had a playoff feel to it. Hopefully we see that in the second round. I would love to see that. I think it would be a great series. You know, you got two teams that have played three games this year. Each game has been decided by one goal. You know, one of them in a shootout. So you've got two pretty evenly matched teams, and the temperature got turned up a little bit against Tampa the other day. Mm-hmm. I thought anyhow. You know, the temperature got turned up. A little hatred got in there. You know, there was some stuff going on in that game. So I think it's great. I love to see it, and I would love to see a second-round matchup with these two teams.
I think it was the tempo that probably stood out for me in that game, and that's usually what you see, you know, once we hit the middle of April, what the tempo is going to be like and what it's like across 60 minutes, and where you started to see a little bit of action. You see Joakim Nordstrom dropping the gloves with Yanni Gourde. That would not have been the first guy that I would have picked to drop the gloves for the Bruins, but he did really well.
He's done it a couple times. Yeah. He dropped the gloves a couple years ago. Maybe it was last year, and it was a big hit. You know, he's not a guy that fights a lot, right? But I remember him chasing around Bemstrom for Columbus, trying to get him to go. You know, and not that Bemstrom's a fighter, but you know, trying to chase him around after he threw it. Nordstrom's really, I mean, he's a popular guy in that room. He plays hard. He blocks shots. He kills penalties. He's a valuable part of the fourth line. I know he's been in and out a little bit this year. But he's a guy that can – you need players like that. You need players like that in the playoffs.
And we'll see it again tonight, obviously. But, you know, you said you wouldn't mind seeing that matchup in the second round. It would be great to watch. How do you feel like the Bruins fare in that matchup? We're a long ways from getting there. But
three games decided by one goal, right? And I know the playoffs are different than the regular season, but each game has been really – tight. Each game has been right down to the wire. They've gotten physical. You know, I think both teams match up really well against one another. I mean, and I know I realize that Tampa's out without Stamkos. I realize that Tampa's without McDonough. So I get that, you know, and that's what they're kind of maybe clinging to a little bit. But earlier in the year, the Bruins were without a couple of their key players, you know, when Tampa came in. And I remember that they came into the TD Garden and said, well, it's a little too early to make this a statement game. It was really early in the season. It might have been October or November. So as now we're getting a little bit closer. And even now, it doesn't – what happens tonight doesn't matter once the playoffs start.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's just a whole different animal once the end of the regular season happens.
So if the regular season
– But I do think they match up really well against one another. I think really close, tight series.
What will also be fascinating, if the regular season ended today, this would be the first time ever that the Tampa Bay Lightning meet the Toronto Maple Leafs in the playoffs. It's never happened. And how those teams match up, that to me would be interesting.
Toronto limping through California, right?
Oh, I know.
I think they had two goals in three games and lost all three, one of them in shootout. But, hey, by the way, Pittsburgh, Bruins go through California in another week or two.
Yeah.
Right? Pittsburgh lost all three in California. So you think it's an easy mark, but all of a sudden they got nothing to play for because they're all out of the playoffs and they win some games.
And those are dangerous teams.
Yeah.
Because those teams can play free and easy. Yes, they have contracts on the line.
Los Angeles has won four in a row. San Jose's won three out of four. And Anaheim's won, their last two. So, yeah. We still got to go through there.
All right, we got a lot to get to today. Obviously, we'll talk more about the matchups this week. We'll talk more about that matchup against Tampa as we go along today. We'll get into some of the details of what we've seen from the team. We'll talk about the Carlo injury the other night, and a whole lot more all coming up. 617-779-0985 for you to join us here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
It's a black and gold freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Along the near side, look out. Dadnoff took one of the Bruins hard against the boards, and it's Carlo.
Well, Carlo was trying to finish his check on Dadnoff. He's coming in on him. I don't know if the stick got up possibly and caught Carlo up high. There was no real hit there, but the referee has a delayed penalty, but Carlo's in some distress.
After video review, the call on the ice, we have a minor penalty for elbowing.
That's unbelievable. That's unreal. He's probably going to get suspended for this, and they just took a major off the board.
All right, back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Guess I'm seeing a different game.
Department of Player Safety.
Guess I'm seeing a different game.
No supplemental discipline.
Unreal.
So that was the.
I'm stunned.
That was the play that knocked Brandon Carlo out of the game midway through the second period the other night. If you have not seen it, I'm sure most of you have, but if you have not seen it, from my vantage point, Dadnov looks over his shoulder, so he knows Carlo's. He knows Carlo's back there, and then throws an elbow that connects right to his face. I mean, I couldn't believe that they downgraded that from a 5 to a 2, let alone
first of all,
discipline.
The rule book is so clear, because I went and looked it up. An elbow to somebody's head that causes an injury is an automatic major. It's clear. The wording is right there. I mean, it's... They're saying it was unintentional because he's trying to pull a puck off the boards and that's the way your elbow's going to go? It's going to go up that high? No. No. I'm seeing a different game. It's like... So the referees botch it, number one, and I like those guys in Department of Player Safety. I really do, and I respect them. You know, I've talked with them. I understand where they're coming from. You know, I get it. It's a hard job. I do not agree with them at all on this. No way. No way.
Well, here's what got me is that...
And I don't... Like, suspension right now, I don't care.
Right.
Because it doesn't affect the Bruins at all. Like, I mean, you know... But it should have been a major on the ice.
They
and so I got more of a problem with the referee.
Yeah, well, they called it
a major.
No,
but that's
I know. They kind of default to that so that they can go and look at it
exactly.
And replay. But then they downgraded it.
If they call it a minor, then they're not reviewing it. They call it a major so that they can review it and see and talk amongst themselves and see what they think it should be. And they felt that he's pulling the puck off the boards. And in doing so, when you pull the puck towards you off the boards, that your elbow comes up that high. Like I said, I'm seeing a different game.
But this is not the first time we've had this conversation because I started thinking yesterday about Jeremy Lauzon getting a match penalty and getting suspended for a hit on Derek Stepan where he returns in the game. Where match penalty, intent to injure. So somehow they're ascribing the fact that Dadnov did not intend to elbow Brandon Carlo.
That's what they're saying.
While they looked over his shoulder and saw what was coming. And a much bigger defender trying to pull that puck off.
Making that one up.
But Jeremy Lauzon comes out of the penalty box against Arizona, shoots the puck, then chases the puck around to the far side to where Derek Stepan is, finishes his check, and that was intent to injure and a suspension for two games.
I have gone into the boards in Brandon Carlo's position, okay? I've gone in his position, and I've come out with a broken nose because the guy elbows me in the back because he knows where I'm coming from.
Sure.
You know what you're doing there. And I don't care if he's a clean player. Oh, he's got no reputation. He doesn't, you know, do anything out there. He knew exactly what he was doing there. It's
baffling.
It is. And it's, look, I mean, there's another in a long line of decisions, you know, on ice, off ice, that get made in this league that just, it doesn't seem to have consistency. And that's what's frustrating is, from incident to incident, we don't seem to be able to predict what's going to be a suspension, what's not going to be a suspension. How long is the suspension going to be? Is it going to be a minor? Is it going to be a major? Like, there just doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to these decisions. And, Judd, you brought up the Lauzon one, and that's exactly what I thought, which is, you know, it's like That's a different play. Absolutely. But, you know, that's ruled a match penalty, automatic suspension. We're kicking this guy out of the game, and we're going to add on to the suspension there. And Dadonov gets 2 minutes, right? For knocking a guy out of the game and for who knows how long. Like, that's what I just don't get. I mean, ultimately, I don't want to see
You want me to read the rule?
Yeah, go ahead. Please do.
A major penalty at the discretion of the referee shall be imposed on any player who uses his elbow to foul an opponent. A major penalty must be imposed under this rule for a foul resulting in an injury to the face or head of an opponent. Hello?
So intent doesn't even matter at that point. If you're going to call in for elbowing and it's an injury, then it's a 5-minute major.
What am I missing?
Apparently, Brian Pockmar did not see Brandon Carlo, 6'5", wander into the opposite corner off the ice and didn't return.
A major penalty must be imposed under this rule for a foul resulting in an injury to the face or head of an opponent.
I mean, and look, the reason that makes a difference, obviously, is the Bruins score on the power play immediately. They could have had 4.5 minutes more of power play time out of that. Yeah. That could have been a total swing of the game. If they end up losing that, if they go on to lose that game and didn't get that power play chance that they should have, that would have been a major bone of contention out of that.
Yes. So let's spin it a little bit forward. So the Bruins were undaunted. They played through that. They scored on that power play from Patrice Bergeron to tie the game. And they were undeterred from that point forward. They were down a key defenseman in a one-goal game late against one of the best offensive teams in the league, and they played right through it to a victory.
That said, obviously, now the concern is, how's Brandon Carlo? And, you know, that's a huge loss. We've talked about him a lot this year,
he's been terrific.
He's been one of, if not your best defenseman all season long.
Well, he's been consistently one of your best penalty killers. Him in tandem with Chara on that back end have been excellent back there. And Carlo's, he's incorporated the ability to get that puck down 200 feet more often than not. He's been real good. He's gotten real good at that. Good stick. He knows when to close, when not to close, when to back off. He's been outstanding on that back end. So that, you know, they use Chara and Carlo to start just about every penalty kill. You know, even though they don't play together 5-on-5 normally, they'll start every penalty kill, and they see the brunt of it. And he's been—it's not just the PK, but he's been really good. His decision making going back for pucks works well with Krug 5-on-5. I'm talking about his ability to skate and close on guys. His season, that whole right side has really been impressive. I asked Bruce Cassidy about that the other day in our interview with him. Right, Judd? I mean, your right side is young. Mobile, you know, Lozon, he can get there. You know, he can get there. He's maybe not as smooth as a Carlo, but he can get there, and he's still learning, and he's getting better and better. But he competes extremely hard. Those three guys compete on that right side, and the emergence of, you know, McAvoy and Carlo, and now Lozon, and you're going to need him. It's going to be him or Clifton, right, in the playoffs, as long as Carlo's healthy. You know, he's looked good over there. So that right side is strong, solid, and young. You know, still room to grow.
Let's get to your calls here at 617-779-0985. Pat in the car is up first. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Morning.
So as far as that elbowing goes, I mean, that's borderline reckless. How many times have we seen a guy get a stick in the face, whether the guy meant to do it or not, and he goes off for 5 minutes, and it's asked, if he draws blood, who knows where it will go. On top of the fact that Carlo is almost 7 feet tall on skates, that was so reckless and so should have been called. I'm totally with you guys, and I've been mad since that play happened. I'm sorry. I've been a hockey player myself, and that's an elbow that guy knew what he was doing.
I completely agree with that, and that's a good analogy, actually. A high stick, unintentional.
Doesn't matter, right?
That injures a guy is a double minor. I mean, it's not a major, obviously, but it's a double minor, right? Intentional or unintentional. You're responsible for your stick, right, where that stick is. Sure. Well, you're responsible for your elbow, too. You know, and the way it came up there, there's no question he meant to do it. just like I thought that Bemstrom meant to, you know, come across with a forearm or or elbow, whatever you want to call it, to the head of Rask when he came through the crease.
Well,
I'm still on that one. I still believe that.
And when it comes to the referee,
just because you don't have a reputation means
right doesn't mean you can't do it. Doesn't mean you don't get away with stuff on occasion.
Well,
right?
Here's another overreaching thing when we're talking about the officials on the ice when they make decisions. Giving an explanation. Why can't you give me an explanation why you have downgraded it from major to minor? Why can't you do that? You do it in the NFL. You know, the receiver was juggling, did not have control, ball hit the ground, incomplete pass, second down. Whatever the case may be, why can't Brian Pokmara tell me what happened, why he is downgrading that? Because this is clearly a key play or potentially key play in the game.
For a lot of different reasons.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all you... Why can't you... You clearly... He went through it in his head. He had a chance to look at it. Tell me. Tell us.
Mark, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
In a situation like that where it's clearly a penalty, as we all know, and the player that gets injured doesn't return, in my opinion, that should automatically be a one-game suspension. You took a player out for the game, therefore, you deserve at least one game. And my other thoughts are, if the Bruins win tonight, you think they pretty much wrap up the number one seed? And if they do, when do you start resting guys like Bergeron and Chara and maybe even Krejci for that matter?
Yeah, I think that's coming. Do they wrap it up? I don't know. I mean, hard to tell. I mean, it's still, what do we have? Judd, you got the standings in front of you. How many games left?
Well, for the Bruins, there's 14 games left. Tampa has a game in hand. So, you know, the maximum amount of points that they can pick up at this point are 30. That would put them at 119 for the Bruins. They would need 12 points to be able to clinch the division outright.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you get under 10 games, you get a little bit closer towards the end, you start thinking about it a little bit. But, and they've talked about it, they've been open about it, whether it's sitting a guy out or whether it's, you know, diminishing some of the minutes. I know that the game against the Islanders, Charlie Coyle led all centermen in ice time. You know, they had a lead in that game. It was comfortable, you know, in the third period, comfortable enough. And they said they rested Bergeron a little bit. So you might see some of that as well. So it might not show up as a guy sitting out a game, but some different minutes within the game.
And actually, Charlie Coyle's minutes are going up again. I want to say, I think he had 20-plus again against the Florida Panthers. Part of that is elevated because he's seeing time on the power play as well. But this is something we've seen.
Power play kills penalties.
We've seen from Bruce Cassidy in the past where I remember we've had conversations, even in the playoffs, a guy like Sean Corrali, his minutes gets elevated based on the matchup or based on where we are.
When David Backes was brought in initially, one of the things that they said is they wanted to take some of the onus off of Bergeron. All right, it didn't work out. You know, he didn't fill that center role. But that was one of the things that they talked about. They wanted to take some of the responsibility onus off of Bergeron and his minutes and what he was needed to do out there. I think you're seeing that with Coyle right now. You know, he's getting a lot of minutes, different situations.
Oh, and he's been good. I mean,
he's been very good. He's been very good. But you are seeing that right now. I mean, listen, I made the point the other day, and we were talking about Pastrnak and Marchand, and those guys, they're great. They've been awesome this year. They've had a tremendous year, you know, and they're allowed to try a lot of things, you know, and they'll turn the puck over because they're allowed to do it. Because when they do it, it looks great. And they're so capable offensively. They're given more rope by Bruce Cassidy to try more things. But they also have the security blanket in Bergeron. You watch what he does coming back into the zone and how hard he tracks back and what he does defensively to help them. You know, if they're playing with a different centerman, and it's not to, you know, no disrespect to the other centerman, it might not look as good.
Right.
Because Bergeron covers up a lot. When those guys, you look at what they do, it's phenomenal. But they've got a guy there to cover up for them.
All right, we will continue here. We got Judd and Bob in studio. We will get to more of your calls coming up at 617-779-0985. And Billy Jaffe is going to join us a little bit early today. He is on the other side coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all here in the Town Fair Tire Studios with you this week. And now joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline is Billy Jaffe. Of course, you can see him as part of the Nesson broadcast. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's everybody today?
A little fired up this morning.
I heard. And rightfully so. They screwed it up. But they don't think they screwed it up. But, you know, I got something from the league, and, you know, they thought it was a normal playing motion or whatever. I thought it was intent right away, and people say, well, intent doesn't matter. You know, Twitter was a fire. Intent doesn't. Unfortunately, intent does come into play. I also talked to officials about, we're talking about the Carlo non-call, obviously, just to make sure if somebody's just tuning in. But anyways, intent does come into play, even though it doesn't say it in the rule book. And it does, as Bob Beers read, must get a major is also in the rule book. But damn the rule book in this case. So, yes, I get the fired upness of this. So the league they thought that he was in a normal playing motion, playing of the puck or shooting motion. And they even sent me a clip, by the way, of a Bruin that did that to somebody. I think it was a year ago. And I said, two wrongs don't make a right. That was, you know, they screwed up, in my opinion. But on the other hand, the officials are the ones who ruled on it. As I think it was Judd said, Pachmara ruled on it. They can, if they are allowed to take intent into consideration. Not in the rule book, but they're allowed to. So that's what ended up happening. And I think they screwed it up.
I think we all think they screwed it up, Billy. But, you know, that's not new, unfortunately, for the, you know, for the league and the Department of Player Safety.
And by the way, it's not me being a Bruins homer. I'm telling you, like, if a Bruin player did that and got away with it, I'd say, I think they're lucky as heck that they got away with it.
All right, let's talk about some things going on around the league. Before we get to, you know, the kind of the tops of the league here and what's best, you know, Beersy was mentioning earlier the pillow fight that's going on for the wild card in the Eastern Conference now.
Oh, my God. Just so you be clear on it, right? Toronto, 4 wins in their last 10.
Oh, God.
Columbus,
awful.
2 wins in their last 10.
They're worse.
Islanders, 2 wins in their last 10. And they've lost, 5 in a row. Mm-hmm. The Rangers are 6-4, so they're kind of, I mean, they're pushing. Carolina, 3 wins in their last 10. Florida, 3 wins in their last 10. Those are teams that are fighting for the wild card.
I know. It's gone from, think about it, the Atlantic we thought was going to be maybe not the best division, as I think the Met has pretty much been the best division all year, but the Bruins had a battle we thought going on in the East, and teams like Florida, teams like, you know, Toronto, maybe not the best, but really going to make life difficult. And if they've done anything, but Toronto has gone sleepless in California, or sleeping, I should say, in California. They have been off. You know, they went into this trip, fellas, having won their last 11 in a row in California, and they have blown chunks out in Cali. Didn't they get one in OT or 1 point in the shootout loss?
Yeah, they lost 1-0.
1-0, right. Okay, so right. They're not scoring at all. Their high offense, high-octane offense has been awful. Their goaltending continues to be, I mean, I know the 1-0 game, obviously they only gave up a shootout goal, I mean. But it's just been okay. Like, this team has been bad out there. And the rest, Florida, they look disinterested. I do think that they played harder against Boston. But I watched their previous 2 games, and their game against Calgary when they lost at home, their 7th in a row loss at home, they looked like, I mean, just couldn't have given a heck in that game, especially when they were down by a goal or two. Columbus has been dealing with a chock full of injuries. The Islanders, I think their scoring lack of scoring has come back to haunt them, even though they went out and got Pageau. I think the real team is we're seeing them. Carolina, it's their goaltending issue right now. So I agree with you. It is a pillow fight is a beautiful way of describing it.
Well, up the top of the list in the Eastern Conference right now, I mean, obviously you got Bruins and Tampa Bay who play tonight, but over in that Metro, Philadelphia's won 8 in a row. Mm-hmm. They're pulled into a tie with Washington atop the division. Where are the Flyers come from? How have they managed to turn this thing around in the second half?
Well, I remember they had a whole new coaching staff that came in to start the year, and Alain Vigneault was trying to change an awful lot. Especially their neutral zone, especially the way that they defended. And it took a little time.
They had a real issue early on in the season with bad turnovers in their own zone, and then they were completely gapped out. There was too much separation between D and wings. Their goaltending was just okay getting going. You know, Hart wasn't bad. Elliott was just okay. Then all of a sudden, started to get it in the middle of the season. They started to turn the puck over less, and they started to get onto the stick of their forwards. I don't know about you guys, Judd and Bob. I'm a huge Travis Konechny fan. I think he's out. I think he's an excellent player, scrappy, complete type player. They're getting more and more production out of the Giroux's. Even Voracek, who you know the last 2 years was given a little heat for being too stationary at times. But have you guys seen what their power play's been doing lately? Holy smokes! I think it's like 8 of their last 9 they've had power play goals, and their power play has been outstanding. They're getting good to very good goaltending, mostly out of Hart. And they added some key depth players, bringing in Grant and Thompson for some big, from size and grit on their depth. They seem to be a team that is very confident right now, and their home record is one of the best in the NHL. So they've come on strong. I give Alain Vigneault and Mike Therrien and Mike Yeo, a lot of credit. They've turned this thing around there very quickly this year.
Has Philly finally found their goalie?
I think they think so. Let's see him in the playoffs. I guess that would be, you know, I'd like to think that that will be the big litmus test for them. He's had a good year. I don't know about a great year, but he's still, I don't even think he's 22 yet. I mean, he's got a 2.47 goals against average and 23 wins. It's not bad. He sure gives them hope. His save percentage is only 910 or 911, but he's better than what they've had there. There's no question about that. And so that's a big plus for the Philadelphia Flyers.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the West. Who out there is standing out, if anybody, right now as as legit cup contenders out West?
Oh, I think you have to consider these teams. These are the teams who I consider cup contenders. St. Louis, who's had just like the Bruins, you got I don't know. Do you guys agree? A pretty remarkable year considering. That they've been without Tarasenko for an awful lot of it. I believe he's close to coming, meaning like I think he's traveling with the team now, starting to practice with them regularly. He's been out for a while with that shoulder injury.
They're in a great race right now with Colorado. Yeah. Both of them lost yesterday, in fact. Colorado lost to Vancouver. I think it was 6-3, and St. Louis actually lost to New Jersey.
Yes, 4-2.
But they've both been on good runs, and Colorado's 2 points behind the Blues with a game in hand for first place in the Central.
Yeah, I like St. Louis. I like Colorado. I got to figure that once Rantanen comes back, Kadri comes back, the goaltender, although Francouz, their backup, who's a rookie but has played pro before, played in the KHL a couple of years, has been excellent for him. I really like Dallas. Do I think they score enough to be a cup contender? Maybe they defend that well that they can, and they're big and they're fast. And even though it's the Pacific, I'm not going to discount Vegas. Peter DeBoer's got them playing well. They did lose to Winnipeg last night. I believe it was 4-0. I don't have the score in front of me. But Vegas has finally taken over that Pacific division. Now they're just 2 points up on Edmonton. I don't see Edmonton, though, me personally, as a cup contender. They're fun. I think they'll create some havoc out there. But I think overall, when it's said and done, St. Louis, Colorado, and Dallas lead the way for me as legit cup contenders.
And Vegas addressed their needs at the trade deadline. They pick up Robin Lehner, you know, so yep. Now you can give Marc-Andre Fleury a game or two off. Malcolm Subban was not able to supply that. And you add Alec Martinez, who's had an immediate impact since coming over to Sin City.
Yeah, I think Vegas has done a nice job. And I think, look, Gerard Gallant, I think, is a great coach. I think he's going to find a job whenever he wants it. Obviously, Pete DeBoer is pressing the right buttons there. He's getting them playing with more pace again. Remember, that was with a calling card their first 2 years. They kind of got away from that. They're playing better. They're defending better. What's interesting, Pete DeBoer has one of the best track records of being a penalty kill special, not a specialist, but that's been one of his real strengths for his teams ever since he's with New Jersey back in the late, 2009-10s all the way through his run, you know, with San Jose with his teams. They've always been in the top five on average. And this right now, they're struggling in Vegas. But otherwise, everything is going pretty well there. I'm curious how much, you bring up Robin Lehner, Judd, I'm curious to see how much he plays. He's played well in the couple of games that he's played there. I mean, you know, is this guy, will he push Fleury or will he be the backup to Fleury? Does it matter if they're both playing well? Can they have a situation like the Bruins have with Tuukka and Yarrow type of thing? I'm curious to see how much he plays.
Let me go back to the East. How does Carolina not pick up a goaltender?
I don't know.
How?
I don't know. It's considering that they go out, but you're yelling at me again. they go out and do some other stuff. I don't know, Judd. You know, they go out and they pick up Brady Shea. What did you guys think of that deal? I didn't mind that. I mean, first-round pick, but he signed for at least, what, two more years? So I get that.
They were missing two key.
Right, Pesci and
Dougie Hamilton.
And Dougie Hamilton, yeah. So they give up a first for that, which they have to do, right, Beersy?
I mean, they had an extra one, right?
Yeah, and he's a lefty, too. So it's good. I mean, it's good, but how do they not go out and at least try and get a backup from somebody? I don't know. Would Malcolm – it's rhetorical. Would Malcolm Subban have been enough for them? I don't know if Vegas would have traded him to there unless they gave up more. And meanwhile, Robin Leonard got traded for him. How many other guys were out there? Could you have pried? I don't know. I mean, Vancouver
could you have gotten one of the Rangers goalies?
Well, but they remember Shesterkin got hurt at trade deadline.
All right.
Right. So now, I mean, you're going to go out and get Lundqvist? I don't know.
No.
Could you have tried to get Ryan Miller from Anaheim? That type of guy? I don't know if no trade clause or not in his contract. But I agree with you. I got to imagine, Judd, they tried. I got to imagine that they did. Jimmy Howard, Detroit?
I don't know.
Would that have been?
I mean,
anybody's better than what they have right now. In fact, if Jimmy Howard stepped in right now, he might be the best goalie in the system.
I don't care
what the record says, and I understand it's been a disaster for him this year in Detroit. But yeah. Are you going to tell me if you had your choice between Jimmy Howard, James Reimer, and death is not an option, and Peter Mrazek,
who would you pick? Yeah, you give Jimmy a chance, right? Hey, what about going for Jonathan Bernier? Going to Stevie Eisenman, giving him a third-round pick for that. I mean, Bernier's had a heck of a year. I mean, I've seen him play some pretty darn good games. And, his record isn't great because the team stinks. But, look, Judd, I'm with you. I don't know. I can't imagine that Don Waddell didn't try.
Well, it might cost them getting into the playoffs or not. You know, and they've got a matchup today. I think Carolina plays against the Islanders. These games are crucial down the stretch. They're 3 points out. Yes, they have a game in hand at least on the Islanders. But the fact that they didn't pick up a goaltender could force them to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. I think I'm rooting, if I had to put a horse in the race, for the Rangers to make it. I really am. If not just from, everybody knowing David Quinn from, being a New England guy, BU for years, and Greg Brown, his assistant there as well, longtime BC stalwart as a player and as a coach, and just what they're doing, the Mika Zibanejad thing there, Temi Panarin. I fully admit, I always liked Panarin. I never thought he'd be this good. I never did. I did not think he would be this good for them. And you could argue, by the way, that Mika Zibanejad has been as good, if not better. Mika Zibanejad has missed a lot of games for them. So I'm kind of, I don't know about outwardly, but inwardly rooting for the Rangers to make the playoffs. I can tell you else who's rooting for the Rangers to make the playoffs is NBC. I mean, they are absolutely rooting for them, especially if you end up getting a Bruin-Ranger first-round series. Two of those games would go to Saturday or Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, or maybe even they put it at prime
time. People at Nesson won't be too happy about it.
Yeah.
People at Nesson, hey, you're right, Beersy, but you know what? Because the Bruins are so good, Nesson is going to lose at least, no matter who the Bruins play, even Carolina, even the Islanders, even Columbus, they're going to lose one game minimum. You can only lose two in the first round at max. Nesson's going to lose one for sure. No question.
Let's talk a little bit about the matchup tonight. The Bruins-Tampa Bay, we saw this earlier in the week. Obviously, as we were talking earlier, this is a potential long way to go to get there, but a potential second-round matchup in the playoffs. Lightning went on this, unbelievable run, and now they've kind of come back down to earth here over the last couple of weeks. What did you see out of them in that game the other night that, is this team... is this the juggernaut that we saw over the course of that kind of, month and a half, 2 month run, or is this, more like what we've seen out of them of late?
Well, I'm sure I jumped on right when you guys were talking quickly about that last game, and Tampa had a great push in the third, but they're still without McDonough. They're obviously without Stamkos. Stamkos won't be back until earliest mid first round. But is this their team? I mean, I don't know. Do you guys agree? I mean, don't you think Ryan McDonough helps make a big difference for them?
Huge.
I mean, you get another 20-plus minute guy out there. And
you're going to face either him or Hedman almost every shift. And yeah, I mean, doesn't make them impossible to beat, but McDonough makes a big difference. He's a very good player.
But to me, one of the things that stood out watching them the other night is that Point is he's having a good year, but he's not having the year that he had last year. And Kucherov, to me, didn't go inside the dots at all.
He's very picky when he wants to do that. Playoffs, he doesn't seem to want to do that much at all. So maybe if the Bruins can play playoff style hockey again tonight, and if you get him in a playoff series again, as RJ, you said, long way away, that might be a key factor, is that his interior play is not always there. They are still mixing in, and I know it's, you know, people say, well, how long do you need? Well, you're still talking a week and a half, 2 weeks. You know, Blake Coleman's still figuring his way out there. He's not getting as much offensive ice time as he did in New Jersey. You know, what does Barkley Goodrow mean for the depth of this team or not? I'm not sure. I'm not sure myself just yet. But I do think that this is still a very good team. It was interesting, the other night they beat Montreal at home, and they were kind of lamenting, I read some of the post-game quotes, that it wasn't a great game at all by them. And I only saw the highlights, so I can't speak it. But they said, Pat Maroon at one point in post-game said, there was really, you know, I'm paraphrasing, it wasn't that physical at all or anything. He called it like a soccer game. So this team, this Tampa team, when they were going through their run, RJ, they were playing with a bit of an edge and talking to, you know, some of their coaches and just checking in with them. They liked how physical they were. They haven't been as physical lately. And so maybe they're not getting that part of their game. Maybe they're saving that part of their game for the playoffs. I don't know. I think they're a very good team still, and I would not discount them, even though they're not playing great right now.
You expect a similar game to what we saw on Tuesday?
Yeah, I do. I think so. Why not? I mean, Bruins will be home. You know, maybe they'll get some juice out of their fans. On the other hand, would it surprise me if Tampa ends up winning another, what is it, 3-1 goal game so far? Could I see another 4-1 goal game and go in somebody, the other team's direction? Sure, I do. I expect a tight game.
Billy, we appreciate the time as always.
Have a wonderful day, gents. See you guys tonight at the rink.
See ya.
Billy Jaffe, you can see him as part of the Nesson broadcast, of course. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, joining me here in studio in the Town Fair Tire Studios. We've got more coming up, another whole hour of the Hockey Show coming up next here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Shoe Center Fire Star!
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Be joined by Ty Anderson coming up at about a half hour from now. Your chance to get your calls in between now and then at 617-779-0985. As we talk about the Bruins, who sweep a three-game road trip last week and now come home for a matchup with the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight.
Did you like Nick Ritchie the other night?
Not bad.
He's a big man. He's a big man.
He was firing him.
Yeah, I mean, he was throwing some heavy artillery there. And look, I mean, that's...
I give that kid Stillman. I don't know much about his background. His father was an offensive player, not a guy that dropped the gloves a lot. I mean, he
Corey
stuck up for himself, but that was... He's a big man. I know that.
Well, I wanted to ask you about Richie and Kasha, the two new additions at the trade deadline. We've got a little bit bigger of a sample size on both of those guys now. What have you seen from them? What are they adding to this team?
Well, I think I think there's an element of, okay, you know, if you get one, maybe it'll start to roll a little bit for you. So we'll start with Richie. Obviously, you know, we saw him drop the gloves the other night. He's not going to have to do that every night. That's just not it's not something that goes on in the league anymore. But, you know, in a game like against Tampa, where the temperature goes up, you know, as long as he recognizes it and says, okay, you know, I need to get in Pat Maroon's face. I need to get in, you know, somebody's face if they're running around a little bit or if they're chirping or if they're chopping guys. And, you know, and he can fill... I know we talk about Tom Wilson a lot, but And did you see his game the other day, by the way?
Yes, I did.
Against, Washington struggling a bit, but against the Flyers, I mean, he was running guys left and right. He fought twice. You know, they lost, mm-hmm. but he was doing his part. I know that. But that's something that, you know, that Richie can certainly do. He took a couple pretty healthy runs the other night against Florida at guys. Caught one guy, missed another one, but, you know, some healthy runs. And that's, you know, I'd love to see that from him. Now, offensively and with the puck, he's got the ability to make some plays. He's got the ability to make some plays. He's got, you know, he can protect the puck well along the wall, win some of those battles. That's what they're going to want to see from him and create some offense. Now, he's created some scoring chances. They just haven't gone in for a couple guys. But, you know, he had one for Krejci against Tampa the other night. Nice pass from behind the net, and Vasilevsky stopped him. So, you know, he's got the ability to make some plays. Now, Kasha's a much different player, smaller guy, can really skate. You know, I want to see a little bit more offensive instinct, I think, from him is what I'd like to see. He's had some opportunities, but in a very general sense, a little bit more offensive instinct. So I don't know if that's still the right fit with David Krejci or not, and that's what they have to determine. We might see some different combinations moving forward to see where it works.
With Kasha in particular, I think one of the things that the coaching staff talked about is David Krejci likes to play between the dots, and that's where Kasha seems to want to go.
Yeah.
So as Bob alluded exactly. to, maybe Kasha doesn't fit there. Marcus Johansson, remember, started last year with David Krejci. He ended up on the left side with Charlie Coyle,
right.
and
right
away
side.
They went.
Right, right side.
Correct. So, you know, where he ultimately fits, I think that's still to be determined. You know, maybe he's playing with a guy like Charlie Coyle, who I think has been fabulous here in the last month in particular. With a guy like Nick Ritchie, I think the coaching staff, what they're talking about is they want him – they want the pace of his game to pick up. That doesn't necessarily mean his foot speed. It's how quickly things are happening. But I think that they're encouraged by the plays that he is making. You know, take the fight out of this, you know, and the physical presence that he can bring. Because in many ways, it was a hockey trade for you. You needed some size. Mm-hmm. You needed some physicality. You needed to be able to get to the interior of the ice. Can this be a guy who can also help you to win board battles? But I think that they're encouraged by that, but it's the pace at which he plays that they want to improve on, and they just want to see him going north.
And as you mentioned, Bob, look, it's not going to be about, with Richie, it's not going to be about dropping the gloves every night, because that's just not, you know.
No, especially in the playoffs.
Right. That's not how it works.
If it happens, it happens, but it's.
He shows a willingness to do it, yeah. So that's good, because you needed another guy on this team who has a willingness to
Absolutely.
Do it. That's not it your captain.
There's guys that are willing. Ryan, let's take that out of it. I mean, there's guys that are willing. I mean, we've seen guys, whether it's Marchand, we've seen Pasta drop the gloves.
Right.
But you don't want
those guys sitting in the box for 5 minutes.
Certainly not. And I don't need Chara having to answer every night.
I don't want David Krejci hurting his hand punching
a guy. Nordstrom. We've seen Krejci. We've seen Wagner. We've seen, you know, that's not an issue right now. You know, so, but you're right in the sense that it would be nice to have that guy. And even if he is a deterrent as well. Guys don't take as many runs when you've got a big guy on the other mm-hmm. team. You know what I mean? So in that sense, he doesn't have to. You do that a couple of times and other teams see it, especially in the division, whatever. Oh, all right, maybe we don't take that run. So it goes twofold. You know, you throw some hits, you show the willingness or the ability to do what he did the other day against Florida, and all of a sudden teams take note, players take note.
Maybe we'll have a better barometer next year. He's still under contract sure. for next year. So he came cross country. He's in a whole new situation, new system, new teammates, et cetera. So we'll have a better gauge on him next year.
I think they both commented on how fast the practices were, and it kind of surprised them a little bit.
Oh, yeah. But I remember, so the general manager in Anaheim, Bob Murray, last year when the Bruins were out there, one of the things that he talked about was that he wished he had a core like the Bruins that could have an impact on younger players. Well, now Nick Ritchie's a part of the Bruins core. And what impact does that ultimately have on his ability to develop? We're talking about
a guy
who's
a bad indictment on his core then.
That's what they were talking about. Corey Perry gone. Ryan Getzlaff is basically the only guy there. I don't know who his core pieces are other than Josh Manson is probably one of those guys. But I don't know who that necessarily is that has that impact. I don't know. I think that it wasn't necessarily an indictment, but I think that he would love to have a core like the Bruins in their ability to lead and to bring people into the fold and to develop. And so having Nick Ritchie around this core, what impact will it have both now through the end of the regular season into the playoffs and then next year when you have him for a full season and a full training camp where he is at that point adjusted?
Well, you know, to that end, you know, because it came up, I think, last week on the show. I don't know whether it was one of you guys or Billy who mentioned, you know, kind of that first day or two of practice that these guys come in for Anaheim, and it was like eye opening. It's like, wow, this is you guys are really going hard here. And it's something that Bruce Cassidy, I know, is, you know, has instilled here during his time, that it's like when we're on the ice, we're going full bore. You know, we might not be out there as long, but we're not going to be wasting any time. We're not going to be wasting any motion. And it's also come up here in the last couple of weeks. I know, you know, on the national broadcast, Milbury's taken some shots at Richie's conditioning a couple of times.
Brian Burke said it as soon as anybody watching the trade deadline shows, and, you know, Brian Burke was on one of the Canadian telecasts, and he said it right away. For what it's worth.
Well, the other thing is with Dallas Eakins, and I don't know what his goal is there. That, you know, Anaheim, as we all of a sudden we've dovetailed into, they're in the midst of a lot of change. You know, Bob Murray's brought in a lot of young players. Dallas Eakins, in the past, when he was a head coach in Edmonton, they were long practices, and they were very involved. And that was not a thing that players reacted to well at the time in Edmonton. I haven't been around Dallas enough this year to see if he's altered that. So this is a completely different situation for him. There are a lot of head coaches that like that. It's quick. You're on. You're off. You know exactly what the drills are, and you better not screw them up.
Getting back to, you know, the cautious side of that, it's, you know, we've seen him for four games here in a Bruins uniform. Hasn't gotten any points yet. As you said, you know, the expectation is that will come. Maybe they move him around the lineup a little bit more, try to figure out what exactly the best spot for him. But it's also, because we didn't see him before that, he hadn't played a game in 3 weeks before he started here. So, you know, there's that too, that he's kind of getting up to speed. In addition to getting up to speed with the, you know, the speed of the team and how they play here, he's also trying to, you know, coming off a 3 week layoff because of an illness and all of that. So he may not be you know, up to 100% of his game at this point either. It's important to keep that in mind. 617-779-0985 is the number as we continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show from our Town Fair Tire Studios.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerai, Bob Beers, the home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers with you. Judd Zerot has headed out to head over to Morning Skate and catch up with Bruce Cassidy on the latest goings on as we get ready for another big matchup with the Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight here on the Sports Hub. 7 o'clock faceoff over at the Garden. So it's Bob and I and your calls right now at 617-779-0985. Let's talk to Mike in Norwood up next. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. Great to talk to you. How you doing?
Good.
So my question is, when we get to the playoffs, I'm a little afraid of Washington. I don't know. I just don't feel like the Bruins match up well against them. So would you rather play Philly or Pittsburgh, or is this year a new year against Washington? Thanks, guys.
All right, appreciate it. Long way to go before we get to
that's crossing over
into the conference finals.
That's the conference finals. So, you know, if you've gotten to the conference finals, you know, I like your matchup against anybody, to be honest with you. And I would feel the same way about the other team. You've done a lot if you get to the conference
finals. When you're
finals,
into the Final Four in any league, yeah. Generally you're, you know, it's pretty much a coin flip at that point.
Do they match up well against Washington? Well, they've had some good games against the Capitals this year. They finally broke through. I shouldn't say finally. They beat them last year, too. But they broke through in that the game where they beat them, what, 7-3. Washington's got all kinds of issues right now. And as they did, actually, you know, when they headed and when they won the Stanley Cup, maybe Braden, do you remember when Braden Holtby was the second-string goaltender
to start the playoffs? Yeah, he wasn't even the starter on game one, right?
And they lost the first two games. Holtby came in, and, you know, the rest is history. They win the cup. But they've got all kinds of issues right now. I mean, Philly's won 8 in a row, and the Washington Capitals won 3 out of their last 10 games. So and Philly took it to them head-to-head the other day. So, I mean, Philly's the trendy choice right now. I mean, Pittsburgh's running some issues, but they've started to score the last two games. You know, they've had health issues all year that they've had to deal with. They've done through a lot of adversity. Mm-hmm. So, look, those three teams over there, Pittsburgh has a 5-point lead on Columbus right now with 2 games in hand. So they look like they're the top three teams. Right now it's just a matter of where they're going to finish. Washington and Philly are tied for first at 87 points, and Pittsburgh has 84 points with a game in hand on both teams. So the way that Philly has played, it looks like it's a, you know, Philly, Washington, and maybe Pittsburgh race because Pittsburgh went through their losing streak. Washington's going through their streak right now, and Philly's going the other way. Who they match up best against, I don't know. It'll be, you know, you got two. I mean, Philly plays Buffalo today, but their home record is unreal. Yeah. It's outstanding.
The Bruins go there this week, by
24,
the way.
5-4, and the Bruins will be there on Tuesday night. So, depending on what happens, depending on, you know, the outcome of tonight's game against Buffalo, they could be on a 9-game win streak with a record of 25-5-4 on home ice. Mm-hmm. That'll be a heck of a matchup on Tuesday.
It's always impossible to handicap these things this far in advance, too, I mean, you got a month to go in the regular season. You have no idea what kind of injuries might pop up. You have no idea, you know, we were just talking to Billy a few minutes ago about Tampa Bay went on this incredible run, and now they're sub 500 over their last 7 or 8 games. It's like they're not, you know, sometimes those streaks just aren't sustainable.
But some of it is also the timing of the season as well. You know, if you've got nothing to play for type of thing.
Sure.
You know, and you've got things wrapped up. So that, you know, you don't read too much into those kind of games. I'm looking more at the teams that are trying to get in and what they're doing. Like a New York Rangers team, talk about injuries. Shesterkin was playing, he was 9-1, and then he gets in a car accident just prior to the trade deadline. You know, so all of a sudden he's out of the lineup with a broken rib, and, you know, the Rangers, you know, come back to earth a little bit because they were on a terrific run there, and they're still on a pretty good run. They just beat Washington again, you know, 6-5. It was a wild game where Zibanejad had 5 goals, including the OT winner the other day. So the Rangers are right there, only 2 points out. Chris Kreider breaks his foot. You know, these injuries pop up, and that's something that the Bruins are really – you can't prepare for it. You can't do anything about it. They happen. But the Bruins have been pretty durable here. You know, we'll see where Carlos sits. We have a better idea today maybe, but they've been pretty durable. So that's – you know, something to keep an eye on here down the stretch with the key guys.
Let's go to Nick in Hull. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Great show. Love hearing the hockey talk. A couple of quick things. I mean, you know, I know Chara is a huge presence in the locker room and, you know, also off the ice, but he's good for 1 or 2 giveaways right in front of the B's net, like every game. And,
yeah,
you know,
the other day they're trying to clear a puck, right?
Yeah, it's almost every game. But, you know, I guess I'll let you guys touch on that. And also goaltending. I mean, are we going to keep going off and on with Halak and Rask back and forth through the playoffs? I mean, if, you know, one of them gets hot, do you have to sit the other guy? Or, I mean, that breakaway save by Halak the other night was absolutely textbook. Probably one of the nicest saves I've seen in a long time, but I guess that's about it. I'll let you guys.
All right. Appreciate the call, Nick. I mean, obviously they won't, you know, they won't continue the rotation into the playoffs.
No. Rask will be the guy unless he's not.
Right.
You know, kind of like, you know, they go into the playoffs and they get blown out the first two games in the first round. Well, maybe you're looking at making a change, but, you know, or bad goals or whatever. I mean, his playoff run last year was fantastic. So he was excellent. And the reason, I think one of the biggest reasons why, is because of the workload that he had during the regular season, because of Halak. So it's good to have that guy that can step in and play those games. I think it's a recipe right now for a lot of teams. Not every team. You know, Tampa's ridden Vasilevsky pretty hard this year. But it is, and Freddie Anderson up in Toronto still plays a lot more. I mean, if you look at the stats and how many minutes, you know, compared to Rask, compared to Vasilevsky, and how many minutes are played. But Vasilevsky's a much younger guy as well.
Sure.
Not that Rask is old, but he's pretty young and maybe has more of a body type for it. So, no, it's you've got two very good goaltenders. I think Halak has gone on, I think he's won his last seven, if I'm not mistaken. And he had a good game. He's had good games here recently. Both goalies have, though. But when the playoffs start, unless something drastic changes, it'll be Rask.
So the Bruins have 14 games to go, including tonight. If they stay clear of Tampa and they, you know, are going to win the division, you would think that it's pretty much an even split down the rest of the way, unless you go to Bruce. If you're Bruce Cassidy, I think you go to Tuukka and you say, "What do you need best prepared for the playoffs?"
Actually, during Bruce Cassidy's scrum the other day, he was asked about that. He talked about it just prior to the Florida game, saying, "Look, we have a script. We know what we want to do moving forward." He said, "Now, if Tuukka came to him and said, I want to play a little bit more or I want to play a little bit less, then that script would change a little bit."
Sure.
But, you know, as of right now, they do kind of have it scripted in how they want to dole out the starts between now and the end of the season.
So, I mean, if it is somewhere in the neighborhood of a split, you know, once again, he's going to be, you know, around 46 starts for the year, right? I mean, that's pretty much where he was last year, and you saw what he was in the playoffs.
Yep.
So, you know, that target is, has been able to be hit because both guys have played well. There really haven't been.
Tuukka's a Conn Smythe winner if they win a cup.
Yep. Should have been. But it's, you know, it's exactly what you wanted for. When you brought Halak in over the last couple of years, he's been exactly what you've asked him to be. Hasn't had any.
A little early for the discussion.
Overwhelming dips in play. And
decision in the offseason because he's an unrestricted free agent.
Sure. So. Well, it'd be a question of what he thinks is out there, too.
Playing very well right now, by the way. Dan Vladar down in Providence has had a very good season. His numbers are excellent. And I'll tout University of Maine, Jeremy Swayman, 48 saves against Providence.
He's on a hell of a run right now.
1-0 win. So, and he's a junior, and I believe he's a Hobie Baker candidate. So,
by the way, because you mentioned the offseason, not that we'll delve too much into that, but some potential good news to that front this week when the word came out that the salary cap could go up, mm-hmm. you know, significantly this offseason. They're talking about, you know, anywhere from $84 to $88 million. Obviously, the more cap space, the better when you're the Bruins and you're facing some difficult decisions. But you brought up the, you know, decision on Halak, obviously Krug and Grizzlick and all that we've talked about before. Any extra cap space that they're willing to give you is likely going to be used one way or the other. So that's good news for teams like the Bruins who are bumping up against the cap this year. 617-779-0985 is our number. I wanted to ask you real quick, because you're going to get going here, yep. and we're going to bring in Ty next, but Charlie McAvoy, we've talked a fair amount about him this week, or this year, as the season has gone on, and his continued development. But I saw Fluto on the Athletic had a thing the other day about his game against Tampa. Team high 25 minutes plus. He's playing against Palat, Point, and Kucherov for much of that. Those guys ended up with zero shots in almost 13 minutes of 5-on-5 time in that game. His game defensively, because a lot of people focus on, the goals haven't been there for most of the season.
Well, they've started to come.
You know,
his offensive game in general has come. He would have a few more assists. Some guys have missed some open nets and some backdoor passes that he's had on a couple of occasions. So he's, I think he ramps it up against the better teams. I mean, you know, when the temperature goes up, this ain't a game. You know, like Tampa, sure. I mean, he had a big hit on point in the second period, right at the blue line. Yep. I mean, laid him out. Perfect textbook, good hit, good hard hit. And he's capable of doing that. You know, he's going to take a few hits. Guy's going to try to get him in the crosshairs if they have an opportunity when he's going back for a puck. But, no, his game has been really good. You know, some of it was reading rushes. I think that continues to evolve and continues to improve. That's an area where, you know, even, you know, going back for pucks and making those quick decisions on where to go with the puck once you get back for it, because a lot of times he's going back for the puck first. He's playing with Chara.
Yep.
So you've got him going back for a puck a lot of times. You know, teams are going to dump a puck soft behind Chara, try to make him turn and go get it. And McAvoy's coming all the way across and getting those pucks, which is basically what they do anyhow. It doesn't matter who's out there. But, you know, he's able to get back quickly. He's able to ignite a rush offensively, you know, with some of his strong skating through the neutral zone. And then he's more and more confident now in the offensive zone. And that confidence comes. That's, you know, he's going to be a real dangerous player. He's going to be the player that we've expected him to be and hoped he would be.
All right, looking forward to hearing you guys on the call tonight.
Yep, thanks.
Beersy's going to head out. Judd's already gone. Ty Anderson is here, and he will be with us the rest of the way. Again, we can take your calls in the last half hour as well. 617-779-0985. More of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back here on The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Now joining us in the Town Fair Tire Studios, Ty Anderson from 98.5thesportshub.com. Good to see you.
How you doing?
I'm good. Fun stuff this week,
I'd say.
Big game tonight. We'll get more into that. But one of the main topics of conversation during the course of the show today has been Brandon Carlo's injury and the lack of punishment for Dadonov. I mean, how do they get this wrong? How do they get this wrong multiple times? They get it wrong on the on-ice officials get it wrong, and the league gets it wrong.
It's always good when the league, the guys in charge of the enforcing the rules, don't know the rule. He's injured on an elbow to the face and in the head. It's a 5-minute major. It must be enforced.
Yes.
This is their own rule book. It must be enforced. They review it, and they go, no, it's actually 2 minutes. As Brandon Carlo, like, limps off holding his face, bleeding out of his face, and that's it.
You know, blinking his eyes. I mean, if you saw him leave the eye, I mean, there was no question that there was an injury there.
So he doesn't come back, and then you go, okay, well, they screwed it up, so now a suspension's going to come as sort of a makeup, right? This is what happens if you mess up a call. You take it out on a suspension or a fine. Neither one of those things happens. Not even a hearing. What are we doing here? Why is this such a confusing process for the people involved now?
I mean, at this point, I don't like absolutes because there should always be some wiggle room in just in case things happen. But at this point in the NHL, like, do they need to? I mean, they kind of already have the rule, as we talked about. If there's an injury, it has to be 5 minutes, and they still didn't make it 5 minutes. But does there need to be just an absolute zero tolerance in the NHL and just say, look, elbow to the head is a guaranteed, you're sitting at least a game? Like, I mean, just put it in those terms so that the league can't weasel out of it.
Well, it's tough because, you know, the IIHF, I think they have something similar to this, you know, and so I don't necessarily know if I want that. Like, because those ones are, it can be a simple one and then the guy's done for the day. So
right.
I just think that the game's never been faster. It's never been more skilled, and I think that I'm not trying to chirp officials here. I think the officiating is hitting a real struggling sort of point here. I think they're having difficulty keeping up with the game, difficulty enforcing all the rules and the different variations of the rules. I just think the whole thing is too convoluted, and it's too again, the game's too fast, and I think so. People are prone to missing things. They're prone to, I think, either being too aggressive or not aggressive enough. So I just think that you just want consistency at the end of the day. I just want consistency. I want to know what to expect. At this point, I don't know what to expect with anything they do. Goaltender interference, elbowing, offside review. You have no idea anymore, and you're just guessing. And that part of it kind of sucks. As a fan, as a writer, as you know, as a coach, as a player, you don't know anymore. It's a complete guessing game, and it's not going to work for anybody.
I mean, it just when I watched it in real time, it felt like a dirty play to me. Right?
It felt like a sneaky, dirty play.
Yeah. And again, it's all contingent upon that quick look over the shoulder, right? If he doesn't look back there, I can give him the benefit of the doubt and say, oh, he didn't know that Carlo's back there, like, or he doesn't know exactly where he is. But when he does that little look over the shoulder and then he goes to get the puck and suddenly the elbow comes flying up, it's like, you know where the D-man is. You know he's bearing down on you. That's it. That looks like a much more deliberate play.
Yeah, and that was a chippy game. You had a couple of leg checks, or I think one was incidental, but you had a couple of leg checks. You had Nick Ritchie fighting Stillman, and then when they go down to the ice, Ritchie throws another punch when they're down. Florida's fighting for their playoff lives. A little bit of a nasty game. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this came out of nowhere and you'd say, well, nothing really happened to lead up to that point. No, there was a lot of stuff happening. So that only, you know, lends itself to that argument more that something nefarious was at play there on the part of Dadonov.
To that end, we've had a number of people who have, you know, asked on Twitter or whatever, like, any update on Carlo. Hopefully we get one this morning.
Yeah, morning skate at Warrior should be starting soon, so whether or not he's there, Cassie speaks shortly after that, we'll find out. Truthfully, I mean, if he's not 100%, keep him out. Your lead is fine enough. John Moore has played well in pinches. Yeah, you know he has 10 straight healthy scratches? I didn't realize that. John Moore hasn't played
it's been
since
that long?
February 12th.
Yeesh.
But one of the things they talked about that is that, well, when they had a game against the Coyotes, when he was stepping back into the lineup, he played 25 minutes and he was fine. So this is where you rely on your depth, but I don't want to put Carlo in if he's not 100%. Too important. Way too important of a piece.
Well, yeah. I mean, you need him for the postseason at all costs. I mean, we know, you know, he hasn't been around a lot in the postseason in the past.
The one time he was, you went to game 7 of the Stanley Cup final.
I agree with you. Way, 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 way too important. Let's go to Justin in Rhode Island. Justin, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I have two quick points on the Bruins, and I think my first might actually contradict my second, but I'll say it anyway. So my biggest concern with the Bruins is sometimes how easily they can get hemmed in their own zone. And like a lot of the faster, heavier teams, obviously, you know, have a better probability of doing that to the Bruins. You saw it with like St. Louis. So that's like my biggest concern. But then my second point, which like I said, might actually contradict it, is, you know, going into the playoffs, I kind of hope and I might be the only Bruins fan to say this, I kind of hope they face a little bit more adversity in the playoffs and don't have that easy of a road. I don't want them to face, you know, Tampa Bay and Washington, but I think, you know, in the past, historically, a lot of teams that have a little bit more adversity in the playoffs leading up to the Cup, you know, tend to be a little bit more, you know, honed in. And I don't know if that would be their, you know, best outcome is to face tougher teams. But I just feel like last year was too easy. I think when you're able to do a scrimmage, you know, amongst yourselves before the Cup, I don't want to see that again. So I kind of hope they maybe have a little bit tougher of a road. Thank you.
Appreciate it. I will take any road that they can get through. I don't care if it's easier teams, tougher teams. Like, you play who's in front of you. If they make it back to the Stanley Cup final, I will not complain if they had to go, you know, if they went faux through, you know, three lousy opponents to get there, as long as they get there.
I'll let Felger and Maz worry about whether it was a worthy cup or not.
You're going to put an asterisk next to the cup win if they don't play good enough teams?
Yeah, that's. I'll leave them to do that. No, I agree with the overall idea that I think when you have adversity early, you're better. I think that getting that 7-game series against Toronto really helped them against Columbus and Carolina. I think Toronto, before St. Louis anyways, I think Toronto was their toughest opponent.
Oh, no question.
All postseason. Yeah. So Columbus gave them some fits at times, but the final three or four games, you felt like it was Boston's to lose. So I think that a good first-round opponent gets you gets your mind right, gets you centered, gets you going. Look back at 2011, right? I think at some point you need a breather, though, right? You talk to members of the 2011 Bruins team. They tell you, if we don't get that four-game sweep against Philly, we don't win the Stanley Cup. Because it was such a hard road besides that. Three-game sevens, they needed that breather. So I think any good team in the postseason, I think, needs that breather at some point. But listen, you can go 16-4 like the LA Kings in 2012, and I'll take that.
Well, you also have to remember, too, and this, look, the regular season has been very good for this team, and they have the opportunity here over the course of the last month to potentially rest these guys or limit their minutes and make sure that they're as fresh as can be. Just keep in mind, the reason that most teams don't make it back to the Stanley Cup Final a year after they win or a year after they lose in the Stanley Cup Final is it's such a grind to get there, right? It's not only difficult in that you have to win three series just to get to the Cup Final, but also you're playing until mid-June, right? You don't get much of an offseason before you're back at it again. These guys had a very short offseason, and then you got to ramp it back up for another 82 games plus another three rounds of the playoffs just to get to the Cup Final. It's very taxing. And having the kind of lead that they've got, especially if they win tonight, make it 11 points up on Tampa with 13 games to play,
it'd be over.
You can go into cruise control, right? Yeah. You can give these guys a breather, and then, you know, the last week or two of the seasons, like, sit guys down if they need to be sat, play guys if they need to be played, whatever they need to do to get ready, they're going to have the ability to do if they can put the division away sooner rather than later.
And what I love about this team, and I think what you have to love about this team, is the fact that every time they're tested, right, or every time there's like a game where few challenges this year. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. They've had such a lead for so long. They've been atop the division since really November, it feels like, and they haven't looked back. Every time there is a test, they've passed it. And they pretty convincingly, too, I would say. So tonight's another one of those tests. But I think that you shouldn't worry about this team having such a lead and going into cruise control because of the way they've played when they've been asked to step up or been asked to win a big game, a rivalry kind of game, head-to-head. They've answered that bell every time.
To that end, his first point, the caller's first point, he said, you know, he still worries about faster, heavier teams when it comes to the playoffs. Is that, do you think, with the makeup of this team and what we expect them to look like when the playoffs roll around, do you think that that's still a concern?
It is and it isn't. I worry about if Grizzly can't find that next gear, I think that he can give you more. I think he's been okay, but I think he can give you more, especially on breakouts. Lozon competes really hard. I like him a lot. More and more I see him, the more I like his game. Up front, Kasha's been pretty good in terms of pressuring players in the D zone and then sparking the rush the other way. He's been pretty good at that. He has no points to show for it yet, but his little details are a little bit more polished, in my opinion, than Heinen's. You know, and it's a little bit more speed, a little bit more aggressiveness in terms of attacking puck carriers. So I like what he does there. I do worry about Nick Ritchie getting hemmed in his own zone. One thing I've noticed is that there was the game against Calgary, his first game. He got lost a little bit in the D zone, but again, that was his first game. He landed in Boston at 11 p.m. the night before, one sleep, one morning skate with the team. So I don't want to focus on that effort as much as my mind does. But I do think that ultimately it's going to be, it might be an issue, but if you look at their last three to four games, they're playing excellent team defense right now. Five-man support, blocking shots, doing all the little things, and I think Sean Corrali will be a big help in that regard in the postseason as well.
Some of the things that you were mentioning in there, and as you start to look toward the postseason a month from now, one of the guys that stands out to me that they've got to get going consistently is DeBrusk. He got the goal the other night against in the Tampa game, right? I mean, he ended a rather lengthy scoreless streak at that point. They've dropped him down to the coil line.
Which I like better, actually.
Do you?
I do. I mean, he needs to play with Krejci, ultimately, come game one.
Right.
But I think that Coyle and DeBrusk have looked pretty good this year, went together. I think Coyle makes everyone better. I think he makes his linemates better. He's kind of your classic center in that regard. But I think that, yeah, DeBrusk, you look at the goals, right? He has 19 goals now in the year. I think he has 8 since December 31st. And if you look at it, three of them came in a three-game stretch, and three of them came in a two-game stretch. So he's very hot and cold, but this year he's been way more cold than hot. They need to get him going. I think once his legs get going, that's when he's an effective player. I liked what I saw in Tampa. I mean, you get rewarded, and you hope it comes in bunches now. So maybe he continues that tonight. But I do think that they could get away, theoretically, with him on either line two or line three. But at some point, you need to see him with Krejci again and get that chemistry going. But it just hasn't been there this year for whatever reason.
Look, we're still kind of incomplete grades on Kasha, but you know, you go into the game against Florida the other night with Krejci, with Richie and Kasha. I don't think that would be something that I would draw up, you know, come playoff time. I think I'm hoping that Krejci has more of a skill guy on that wing than Nick Richie. Not that I don't like what Richie brings to the table, but I don't want him to be a second liner on this team.
No, and then you look at some of where those ice times were for those guys. Like Kasha finished with almost 19 minutes against the Lightning. You really can't put Richie out there for 19 minutes. You can't do it. So you need one of those other wingers to step up and help out in that regard. So yeah, Richie's the third liner on this team. It's just a matter of, does he have the fit with Coyle? They've tried this big body fit with Coyle in the past, and it really hasn't necessarily worked out. They tried Backes, they tried Solaric, they tried Richie this year, Brett Richie, and then they tried Nick for one game. You got to find out if that works. You know, look back at last year's postseason. He had Johansson and he had Heinen. You look at this year, he's been his best with Bjork. So maybe that doesn't work for him for whatever reason. Maybe he is the big body on his own line, but they still need a few things they need to figure out here, but I'd keep this in mind, too, with Krejci can give you more, too. You look at his last 10 games or so, I think, was it two helpers? You know, he's done some of the smaller things, you know, the generating odd man rushes and what have you, but not a lot of production to his name right now, so he can give you more as well.
We've talked a little bit about McAvoy earlier today, but with Carlo potentially, you know, we don't know. We don't know what his status is going to be. But let's assume for a second he'll be out tonight. Is Jeremy Lauzon ready to play more big boy minutes?
I think so. Watch him on the PK. I mean, he battles, man. He's on the ice for the goal against the Stevens goal on Tuesday night. But other than that, love his game.
I mean, what I mean by that, by the way, I mean, he's a 14, 15-minute-a-game guy, you know. Carlo's playing 22, 23, 24 minutes. Like, you know, can Lauzon handle that type of a step up against top competition?
You know, I think he could, but I feel as if the natural move would be just Grizzlick gets a little bit more minutes. You look at how that sort of played out. Lauzon would, assuming that he's down, Carlo's down, Lauzon probably hits about 16, 17 minutes, which isn't too different. But you could see Grizzlick challenge with 20, 21, something like that, more PK for him. I think he could do it, though. Honestly, I kind of want to see it because there might be a situation in the postseason where
he has to. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Is, you know what? Look, you know, feels like it happens every year with this team. You get to the postseason and you end up, you know, the depth gets tested, particularly on defense. Like, you got to know what these guys can do, right? You got to give, you know, just let's take it for a spin, see what it can do. And if it, you know, if he shows he can't handle it, then at least you know going in, you better have a plan B.
Dude, I just remember 2017 when he had Joe Morrow and Tommy Cross.
You love bringing up the Tommy Cross.
It's the worst. You know? It's like the worst thing. It's like the worst thing that ever happened to me. It's one of them, anyways. I would say that was. I was like, why is this happening? They just what's his name, Mike Hoffman, picking you apart. It's like he knows who he's going against. This isn't fair. This shouldn't be allowed.
As we wind down here, just a minute or two to go. Matchup tonight. Obviously, we just saw it on Tuesday night. Now we get to see it here at the Garden. I think most of us, as we did last year around this time, expect that these two teams will be playing in the second round. Doesn't necessarily always work out that way. But do you like this as a playoff matchup if you're the Bruins?
I do, because I just think that they know how to get in Kucherov's head. The last few times they played the Lightning, they make Kucherov have a meltdown every time. I mean, they know how to get under his skin. And talking to players on teams from years past, I've brought up Kucherov, and they're like, oh, yeah, you can get under his skin real easily. And he's prone to just having a complete meltdown. And I think that you saw that on Tuesday night. They match up that fourth line against him. If that fourth line is rolling against Kucherov, he's not going to have a good time. He's just not. So I like them for that reason. They make those deadline additions. They get Coleman, Goodrow, and Bogosian. and I thought all three of them were invisible. I noticed Bogosian for the wrong reasons, actually, on Tuesday. I don't think this guy's going to fit with the Lightning. I think that once they get healthier on the back end, he's their scratch. But if he has to play, I don't fear that like I would fear Braden Coburn or even Dan Girardi. I thought Girardi was good for them, and I didn't think he was going to be. So I think that's a good matchup for you. I do worry about some of these other guys like Pat Maroon. What do they do over the course of a 7-game series? But you have Nick Ritchie now. Yeah. I think you can minimize that a little bit. So I do think it's a coin flip, but that's more than I thought it was last year.
You got to try to avoid them at all costs.
Exactly. I like your chances this year. I think it would go 6 or 7, but I like your chances more than I liked them last year, if that makes any sense.
I think it makes perfect sense. I do. It would be a hell of a series to watch.
It would.
It would be a really fun series to watch.
We didn't get the full version of that in 2018, I thought, because the Bruins were just not ready. There were some players not ready for that moment.
Yeah.
And I think now they are. Tampa, obviously, they've been there again and again and again. This is Tampa's last crack, in my opinion. This is their last chance, or they're the new Capitals. And they're going to have to do some serious cap crunching this summer. They're not going to be the same team next year. So this is it for them. So this would be a good series if you get it.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. If you missed any of it, of course, you can check out the podcast. It will be up shortly, and we'll talk to you next week. Ty, thanks for coming in.
Anytime.
We will be back with you next Saturday morning. I will be back with you as well tomorrow from 9 until 1 with apparently Topsfield Selectman candidate Marshall Hook.
Wait, what?
He's running for Board of Selectmen in Topsfield, apparently.
Oh.
Just saw that.
He's just
morning.
Trying to be the king of the fair. He just wants to eat the big pumpkin. Right. That's what happens if you get elected to that.
Politician Marshall Hook joins me for 4 hours tomorrow. We'll talk to you then. Have a great Saturday.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.